So, folks, we're going to switch gears now and bring it back to Baltimore, bring it back to Maryland. I want you to join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook page. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. In the studio is Marta Mossberg, columnist for the Baltimore Sun and the Frederick News Post, and Dr. Lawrence Brown, political activist and public health consultant, assistant professor of public health here at Morgan State University. Marta and Lawrence, welcome. Good to have you both in the studio.
Good to be here.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So let's start off with the political news of the moment before we turn to some stuff happening here in Baltimore City. And I guess the salaciousness of politics that people like to jump into. But also a fairly serious issue when the one candidate, Gansler, Attorney General Gansler, who is running for governor, says when he talked to his volunteers, there was this somebody taped it and gave it to the Washington Post. Gansler's whole quote was, I'm going to read the whole quote since we only hear the first sentence. I mean, right now, his campaign, talking about Lieutenant Governor Brown, his campaign slogan is, vote for me. I want to be the first African-American governor of Maryland. That's a laudable goal. But you need a second sentence, because here's what I've done, and here's why I've done it. Lawrence Brown.
Well, you know, we know that Gansler is a hypocrite. You know, he's trying to say that Brown's race doesn't matter, but later in the same meeting, the Baltimore Sun reports that Gansler says that his running mate will be African-American. So that lets you know right there that he's playing the politics of recognition. He understands that there's a need for racial diversity in our body polity, and it tells you that he's trying to cast aspersions based on race while benefiting from having his own black running mate. So I think that's the interesting irony in his statement, is that he follows up by saying, you know, I'm going to have my own running mate who's black, and thereby letting the voters know that I'm sort of playing to this issue that I'm accusing Brown of playing to as well.
Marta Mossberg.
No, I totally agree. But I also think that's sort of what everyone else is saying in the state as well. And that it's, you know, you look at what's going on in Montgomery County with the replacement of Rob Garagiola. You know, there's a group, there's a guy, I think his name was Rob Feldman, who was going to be the pick. And now it's up in the air because a group called People of Color wants someone who's a person of color. So simply because they're black, not because of what they believe. So, you know, that kind of stuff, I think, goes on a regular basis. And it's kind of known that you need to have a diverse, you know, group of people running in order to be elected. Now, Maryland has a large black population, and I think that it's just a fact of life.
And it is a fact of life that we need racial diversity. But I think one problem coming from a progressive perspective, when we look at the Democratic Party in this country, they're increasingly putting forward faces from different hues and backgrounds. But I think the question that voters need to ask is, are we interested in only a politics of recognition or in a politics of real representation? And I think by real representation, we're talking about, will our politicians really speak to the issues that our communities are facing? It's not enough to just have someone from a Hispanic background, someone from an African-American background, but there are issues that our communities are facing. The Trayvon Martin case highlights it. What's going on with our prison industrial complex highlights it. The mass incarceration of black men, jobs, unemployment, crime and antisocial behavior. So will these candidates actually speak to these issues and the real needs that our communities are really having? And I think judging from that position, we should be looking at, I think, these sort of races in a whole different manner.
I mean, go ahead, Marta.
No, I think that people should be represented based, you know, people should be elected based on what they think and what they would like, you know, what their ideas are, what their plans are for the community. And it's this whole flap to me seems a non-issue because it should be about what Gansler and Brown have planned and what they're going to do. And I don't really think Gansler said anything all that inflammatory. It's just, you know, he got caught saying something sort of indelicately and is now being held accountable for it. And I don't even know if he will actually, because it's the middle of August and I don't know who's listening right now.
Well, I don't think that what Gansler said is inflammatory, but I think it does reveal a lot about his character. It does reveal an insidious double standard that he is trying to call out attention about Brown's race while trying to benefit from the race of his own running mate. So I think that that's telling. That's telling when we do vote for our politicians, we want them to have high character. And if someone is, you know, trying to play one side of the fence, but they're really sitting on the other side, you know, that's problematic. But I don't think Brown is you know, a great candidate himself, to be fair. Here's a guy who here in Baltimore has sat on the EBDI, East Baltimore Development Incorporated Board, which has displaced over 700 African-American families, promised 8,000 jobs, but 10 years later had only delivered 759 jobs and took over $212 million in our tax money to do these sorts of things, and they really haven't shown the type of progress that they promised. So I think those are the type of thing that Baltimore voters really need to be paying attention to. Does Brown really care about the average everyday person, judging on the way EBDI has treated people in the Middle East community?
I think that's a great point, because a lot of the O'Malley, the political machine here, it supported EBDI, it supported State Center downtown, all of these, or building the Hotel Convention Center, which is a big flop now and needs money, needs to be bailed out, basically. All of these major projects haven't really worked, and that's his economic development record. So he has to be judged by that, not just, by the color of his skin, obviously.
Well, you keep saying the color of his skin, but the part of the issue, and I ask you both about it, and you raised the issue, Lawrence, about what's the term used, of recognition.
Mm-hmm.
We reached a point, where we're kind of, in some ways, the history of race in America begs a lot of social and economic questions.
Right.
And the response to that seems to be whether it's Ehrlich picking some steel or whether mm-hmm. it's somebody picking another running mate because they're African American, mm-hmm. is that in place of answering the social and economic issues and the issues around race that face so many Americans? Hold on, I thought we'll come back and answer that when we come back from this break. Stay with us. We're going to go out with Crossroad Blues. Today's the day that Robert Johnson died, playing some of his music along with Max Roach's. Well, that was Gil Scott-Heron, and we're playing him because that's Me and the Duffel Blues. It was written by Robert Johnson, so it's a modern take on one of Robert Johnson's pieces, who died on this day in 1933. Do I have that right? Did I say that right? 39. Let me get that exactly right before we jump back in our program. So I'd like to get up. 1938. Got my days all wrong, years all wrong. But this is the day that the great Robert Johnson died, and we're playing some of his music, as well as Max Roach, who also died on this day. We are joined here in studio by Dr. Lawrence Brown, political activist, public health consultant, assistant professor of public health here at Morgan State University, where we broadcast from. Marta Mossberg, columnist with the Baltimore Sun and the Frederick News Post. Join us here at 410-319-8888. We're talking about Doug Ganser and Lieutenant Governor Brown. We're talking about, in a moment, about Baltimore City and some of the outrage going on around some issues here facing the police. We'll talk about that. Your thoughts, 410-319-8888. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. So where we left off, the difference between having a person of color on a ticket and addressing the issues, as you were talking about, mm-hmm. Lawrence, that are kind of deep economic social issues that are represented by sometimes the face of a person of color but don't get into the depth of the issues that have to get resolved.
Right, and the problem goes to the type of political system that we have here in America. Most folks think that we live in a democracy, but we live in a republic. And in a republic, you elect representatives to vote in different bodies and legislatures for you. But the problem in our republic is that our political representatives are being sponsored by and their campaigns are financed by these big developers and these plutocrats. And so, in effect, when you have Citizens United opening the floodgates for more money into politics, you have plutocrats and big developers like we have here in Baltimore that are controlling the decisions that are made and how resources are allocated. And I think that goes to the issues that who will Anthony Brown, who will Gansler, who will anyone that's running for office really represent when most of their money is coming from plutocrats, developers, and those who are wealthy?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't blame I don't disagree with you on many points, but I don't think Citizens United is to blame for what's going on in Maryland. Maryland, its biggest issue in my mind is that it's a one-party state and has been for so long that there's a lot of corruption here. And in order to reach the highest echelons, you have to follow the party line. And it's just very hard not to be the establishment candidate. So it's hard to have outside voices here because for so long you've had to do all the legwork. I mean, it's just like the Chicago machine. It's like you know your role and you do that your entire life until you hopefully get to this top point.
Well, I mean, folks, join us here. We want to hear your thoughts at 410-319-8888 and it on these issues. I mean, but what Lawrence was just saying, whether it's Republican leadership or Democratic leadership, isn't the issue the same no matter what state you're in? You have the power of money in politics. And one of the things that struck me, this as example, these are Democrats, but this is because we're in Maryland, mm-hmm. but it could be any state. When the whole piece around Carl Stokes the other day, when he was confronted at the city council, was picked up by the Baltimore Brew. We'd actually heard about it, but it was off the record, so we never talked about it on the air because it was off the record.
A perfect example of how things work around here.
And he was told by Steve Carney, former director of communications for Governor Martin O'Malley, that you're done. I'll make sure you're through in politics in Baltimore, was the quote that was given to him. And, you know, when you look at – and I know Steve Carney, and just as a disclosure, I'm very friendly with Steve Carney. I'm friends with Carl Stokes. I just put those things out there as well. I know both men. But when you look at Steve Carney's brochure, it says about his company, KO Public Relations, strategic communications firm that helps clients where business, government, politics, and media meet. That's what you're talking about. That's the problem, is that there's a power mm-hmm. that goes on no matter which party it is in this country. Right. That has to do with where that power meets.
Okay, but in Maryland, though, I mean, who's not a top paying lobbyist in the state of Maryland who has not worked for Mike Miller? You know, I mean, KO Public Affairs has done all the gambling advertising, gambling marketing push. It's done State Center.
Yeah, but a lot of the people who own those companies are Republicans.
Everyone's in on it, but the ones who benefit the most are the ones who have gone on. Look at all the big developers. Most of them have started out in government. I mean, that's just how they got their start. At some point, they were started with a BDC or through some other economic development arm and then went on to do their own thing because they know they had the connections to make that happen. You just can't start something on your own here. Or pretty much in the United States now, it's very difficult to do anything because you have to have those connections to be able to make it happen.
Well, because part of the question is what comes first, the chicken or the egg here? Is it business or is it government?
Well, I'm not sure which one comes first, but I do know that, you know, the Republican Party is absolutely atrocious. But here in the state of Maryland, I think my co-guest has a real point, and that is that the Democratic Party is absolutely corrupt, and they are definitely in the hands of business interests and to the detriment of taxpayers. And I think that the real issue that this raises is that one thing I admire about the Tea Party is that they are calling their Republican National Party into accountability based on what they want. And I think progressives need to do the same thing with the Democratic Party and say, look, you guys are being absolutely corrupt. You're beholden to too many corporate plutocratic interests at the expense of taxpayers and at the expense of the welfare of the people. And we will hold you accountable. That's what needs to happen from a progressive standpoint. And I don't think we're doing our job to make that happen.
I mean, I would like to clarify business interests because I would just say these guys are not, you know, we're not talking about entrepreneurs who are trying to do their own thing. We're talking about developers. I mean, look at what goes on in Baltimore City. I mean, Baltimore City is not improved. What's improved are a few areas of Baltimore City that benefit a very select group of people. I think you had Louis Mazzarandino on recently who had written a piece about Harbor East and just how basically, you know, here are just it's this little enclave that is built up for a small group of people. It's not benefiting all of Baltimore. Nothing's changed. I mean, when you build a hotel convention center, those are all low paying jobs. You know, Baltimore doesn't have any more jobs than it did. It has fewer jobs than it did 10 years ago. So who is this benefiting? You have millions, hundreds of millions of dollars being benefit, you know, of benefit going to a few people, and the rest of the city just suffers. So
all of the United States is suffering from the same malaise where five out of six job sectors are growing are the ones that pay the lowest wages in America. We no longer have General Motors. We no longer have Bethlehem Steel and all the companies that pay a wage that builds the middle class. We now have people struggling who would have been in the middle class, but instead of trying to make minimum wage just to feed their families.
Mm-hmm. I mean, why does someone who buys a Ritz-Carlton condo deserve a tax break, but not a person who buys, you know, a row house in Baltimore City that doesn't come from a big developer? I mean, that makes absolutely no sense to me. It's completely unfair if you're going to use, you know, progressive terms. I think that there's no fairness in the city. It's all rigged towards a certain group of people.
And I think that's what I love about David Simon's The Wire, is that it does explicitly thematically discuss how the game is rigged. And when Steve Kearney says that to Carl Stokes, he's saying you're not playing the game the way you're supposed to. You know, you're breaking the rules in the game and you're done. You know, game over. And I think that's the type of thing that's going on in Baltimore. That's what's going on around the state, and that's what we have to figure out what to do in order to address it.
I mean, Stokes sounded so cowed in that article in Baltimore Brew. It was kind of like if you believe that how you voted was right, stand up for it. Stand on the rooftops and talk about this. I mean, he's got the people of Baltimore behind him, I would guess, most of them. But he's just afraid. He's just walking around looking for table scraps is my take on it.
Stokes?
Yeah.
I didn't read that about how he said it.
Well,
there is a sense in which it really does make a lot of sense when you read another Baltimore Brewer article that talks about who's financing his campaigns, right? It's not the Beatty developer, but it's the Angelos developer. And so that's the sort of thing that, you know, if you have a moral, real ethical backbone, you know, you would sound differently as opposed to maybe you're just with another camp, in the losing camp of another big developer. And that's the thing that I would love to see from Carl Stokes, is a real ethical, moral outrage, and not just perhaps sort of I'm being financed by the opposition. And that sort of speaks to the reason why I'm really opposing this deal.
Well, I don't know that he is opposing it because Peter Angelos is financing him. And who cares if Peter Angelos is financing him? If he believes what he believes and Peter Angelos wants to give him money because he believes that too, so be it.
I mean, but I think that is the question, is does he really have a moral and ethical opposition to this? Because, you know, Harbor Point, this is not the only TIF deal that's gone down. You know, this game includes everything from EBDI to Under Armour to the failed Superblock project. And so he did form the task force, which I definitely give him credit for. But the issue is, how do we raise awareness that all of this sort of behavior is really a part of the game that is rigged against us, and then have the consistent advocacy to oppose it and to change the way that things are done?
I will at least say that on this program, when Carl's been here debating, Carl Stokes has been on here debating others on the show, because we've had a lot of shows on development in the last month and a half, and we'll have more leading up to this housing forum that takes place on September 16th at the Enoch Pratt Library. He has stood up. I mean, I thought he's been a pretty strong voice against EBDI's development, against the stuff going on. I think he's been fairly consistent in this, to the point where I think he's become like an outsider on the council, where, you know, that there's a council full of insiders, right, and there's a couple of folks sitting on the outside, and he and Mary Pat. But let me go to the phones here and get some folks in, and then I'm going to switch gears and ask you all a question that seems to be getting a lot of outrage in some parts of the community in Baltimore over where the police are putting their efforts. We'll come back to that at 410-319-8888. Russ, on the east side, you're on the air.
Greetings, Mark, to you and your panel.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Mark, I think we need to revisit some fundamentals here. You know, at the end of the day, it's the man with the most votes, not the most money, that wins elections. I can hold up Wellington Webb when he ran for mayor of Denver. Didn't have a cent. But he walked, he talked, he got out there, and guess what? He won the election over a candidate who was much better funded than himself. We talk about Baltimore City as a whole. We can get control of things if we decided to, our police department and so forth. I hold up San Jose as an example. San Jose, when I was out there in the military at Fort Ord, they were, San Jose was off limits to most soldiers, most places. But when they decided they wanted Silicon Valley, look at what happened. And I say that because the problem is with the people. We the people seem to be in some kind of a coma because we are doing things and voting for people that are against our own best interests. And when you don't know or can't identify your own best interests, you're going to find yourself in what's happening now. Because if you want to see where Baltimore is either going to be Detroit or D.C., it's either going to be regentrified to the point that you're not poor blacks, the people who are living here now, who have been in houses for generations, are not going to be able to stay. Because if they hold on to their property, they won't be able to afford the property taxes that are going to be coming at them. And it looks like all the money we're spending downtown, to include $88 million of money dedicated for areas of poverty, which does not include Harbor East, we have an administration that's presiding over the demise of Baltimore's black citizens as they exist today. Now, whose fault is that? We vote for these folks. It doesn't cost us any money to go vote. If you don't have $25, $50 donation, go vote for the candidate of your choice. Get your neighbors and friends to come out, and I think you would have done just as much as if you gave $1,000. Thanks, Mark, for the time.
Thank you, Russ, for your thoughts.
I agree. I don't think we vote for the people who are in best interest, but I mean, it's an entrenched power structure. There's just a lot of there's a lot of power through incumbency, and again, you know, there is that machine in Maryland that has produced these certain stream of candidates that everyone sort of has to vote for. Otherwise, there's really no alternative. I mean, I don't know, you know, and people are also voting for people who give them money, and that's where we're at right now, and it's an unvirtuous cycle.
Yeah, and I think that the caller, when you mention San Jose and Denver, those may be outliers. I think there is a strong correlation between those who are able to run and win political office and compared to, you know, some of those outliers that he mentioned. But I think the essential point that he's making is right on target, is who is to blame? You know, and we, the voters, we, the people, are the ones that are putting folks in power that are not representing our interests. And it's a real problem when we can't even identify our interests. And it points to what Stevie Wonder says: when you believe in things that you don't understand, then you suffer. Superstition ain't the way. And that's what we're dealing with here in Baltimore.
Yeah.
Superstition.
There we go. 410-319-8888. Let me ask a question here. This is switch the gears a little bit. But one of the things that people have been talking about a lot, I've heard being out in the community, is that police have beefed up patrols in Baltimore in certain communities because of the rise in armed robberies and rise of robberies in the street that have taken place. But as someone called in and said the other day, but look, when they're right, what's happening here, there have been robberies going on in Baltimore City all the time, but all of a sudden there's a robbery on the border of Homeland, there's a robbery in Remington, there's a robbery in Little Italy, and now all of a sudden we're paying attention to robberies taking place on the border of communities that have a lot of money or where power resides. But those things are happening all the time in a lot of communities, mm-hmm, with less money. And all of a sudden, it's become an issue. So a lot of people are kind of – this is an issue that kind of affects people a lot, mm-hmm, in terms of their perspective of who is cared about in the city and who gets protected and who doesn't get protected.
Actually, one of my friends was broken into in Roland Park, Lisa Meager. She was quoted in The Sun talking about it, put that out there. I think part of this, it's an image thing, because Baltimore, you know, if this is written about and people don't want to live in Baltimore, then this is a property tax base for the city, and it's not in other places of town. So, you know, that I think influences in part why people are protected or seemingly perceived to be protected more in these areas than others.
Yeah, and I think it goes to the question, you know, another great question sort of asked in The Wire, which was, what is the value of human life in places like Upton, Druid Heights, Greenmount East, compared to the value of human life in places like Roland Park and Little Italy? And I think that when we look at some of our social science statistics, we find that the life expectancy of people who live in Upton and Greenmount East is much lower than those who live in Roland Park and Little Italy. We find that the wealth and income that folks have is much lower. So are we ascribing the value of human life according to these sort of arbitrary statistics that really have nothing to do with the fact that everybody is a human being, that we should be allocating our resources, even our police resources, in a much more fair and equitable way. And I do want to clarify what I said about Carl Stokes earlier. He is actually the best politician that we have in the area, but he is still constrained by this game. And the game is what needs to be changed, and that's what's problematic and driving a lot of these sorts of issues, especially with the police.
Now, it was said in the show here today, and what you just raised, Marty, let's tackle this. Now, listeners, join us here. Your thoughts, 410-319-8888. We had a program here on police and what are the police for and what is and the issue of who gets shot, who gets arrested, who goes to jail in our prison system. And many people called in and said, which would support what you're saying, but maybe from a different angle, and see what you think. We'll start with you, Marty.
Sure.
Is that police are here to protect property and
right.
protect people with property, not to protect people and the citizens of the city. And you just said that, you know, that Friends of Roland Park get broken into. It has to do with property, property taxes, revenue. The wealthy get protected, and no one else does.
Well, I mean, I lived in the city for a long time, and the police, you know, where I lived in Butcher's Hill, Patterson Park, I would say it's not just protecting property, it's just maintaining a safe, you know, a safe city. Because if you don't want to go to, if you can't use the park, or if you can't walk in the street and feel safe, why would you want to live in the city? And so it's a variety of things. I think everyone deserves to be protected. I mean, the police are not here to prevent violence so much, though. I mean, they can only react to it. Like we're the ones who have to deal with it firsthand, each of us individually. But you know, I think everyone has a right to feel like the police are going to respond to their issues. And if there are a lot of break-ins in Roland Park or Homeland or anywhere in the city, you would hope that there would be a beefed up presence to prevent that or to find who's doing that.
But I would think that I agree with that. I think there's also a problem in terms of who the police really go after. What murders do they really decide to prosecute? You know, a lot of attention is given to these sort of robberies or any incident that happens in a rich neighborhood. But someone like Brandon Sims, who was murdered in the Upton community, you know, the police haven't sufficiently investigated who killed him. His family has talked to me about the fact that police haven't gone after his killer. And I wonder, do they go after someone who's murdered in Upton the same way they might go after the killer of someone who's murdered in Little Italy? And I think that goes to the issue of disparity. You know, it's not just that the police are protecting property, but there is a war on drugs. They are really out there disproportionately arresting people. The ACLU released a report talking about marijuana arrests and how black folks are disproportionately arrested, even though black and whites use a lot of drugs at the same rates. And so, you know, there is a sense in which, even though, again, we have a black police chief, a black mayor, that whose interests are really being represented as it relates to the allocation of our police resources, whose attention is really, you know, what is the value of human life when it comes to police investigations, the war on drugs, all of these things, there's still a disparity and inequity, but it's driven by and large because, again, we live in a society where the game is rigged and we're living in a system where race is still a determining factor.
I think this is a branding issue, though. This is about the city saying, we want to be perceived as a safe place. We're going to protect the Inner Harbor. We're going to protect Harbor East. We're going to protect Roland Park. We're all the people who,
but that's,
you know,
about power and money. It's about white people with money being protected and black folks not being protected.
I think that it's not, you can't take it just to race, though. I think there's a whole, you know, again, going back to the fact that we have a black mayor, black mm-hmm. police chief, these are their decisions.
Right.
So
that
means
I'm not taking it back to race. That means that I'm taking it to power. I'm taking
right.
it to plutocracy.
So let's,
I'm saying
let's
those
make it about
are the factors.
Race,
but I would
well,
say,
race is still a determining factor in outcomes. But what I'm saying is just because we have a black face in government, it doesn't mean that they're really addressing issues that are happening in the black and poor communities in the city. And I think we have to learn to make that distinction.
Because poor black communities are still the enemy community when it comes to the legal world. They are the ones arrested for everything that goes on in our society. More white people use drugs than black people in America, both per capita and in real numbers. But nobody white is ever arrested. Very few people are arrested for drugs in the society. In this city, you sit and smoke your dope, shoot your dope in Roland Park, you don't go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
You do go to jail if you do it in Upton.
Right.
That's you know, I mean, that. And so let's see what our listeners think. 410-319-8888. Travis, you're on the air.
Hey, I can't believe I'm going to do this. I'm going to kind of agree with Marta on this.
Thank you.
You're allowed, yeah, man. It's an open show. This is democracy.
Let the love out, brother. Yeah. Let the love out.
Go ahead.
Yeah, maybe this is.
I agree with Marta sometimes, too.
This is my Tea Party conversion coming out here. But while race is definitely a governing fact, I think what ties into both the police issue and the other issue you were talking about in terms of our elected officials, it's class. I mean, if you look at the candidates for mayor in the last primary, because we know the general election doesn't mean anything. The Republicans have the same ideas as the Democrats, except they also don't like minorities. So you have the Democrats, you have 7 or 8 Democrats running, all of them go, hey, we're going to lower taxes for property owners. Well, who is that helping? It's helping people of the upper and middle class. It's helping people with money. When you look at these neighborhoods, yeah, it's true. They all are, you know, like the other guest said, there is a race factor, but there's a definite class factor. You know, I go on a cop walk every week through Highland Town with the police, and you can see where the attention is paid to not only policing but to general city services. As you get closer to where the money is, closer to Canton, closer to Eastern Avenue, you know, all of a sudden it's a different world. But once you get north of Pratt Street, where poor people live, it's like they just, you know, they just leave the poorer parts of town to rot. And, you know, in regards to the question of, you know, why, how people can speak with their vote and why money isn't a factor in these elections, it's because the money is behind the candidates who support the status quo of maintaining downtown and Harbor East and Roland Park. And as long as, you know, we have a mayor and a city council who care more about their donors and the donor class, so we're going to have the same outcomes. You're going to have 7 people in the primary all saying, oh, yeah, lower property taxes, slash services, let's get some austerity in here, let's, quote-unquote, tighten our belts, when really what's needed are more services and, you know, more community investment, not the type that means giving lots of money to millionaires to build things, but the type that means building things for non-millionaires. So I think really the dirty word that we're not using here, and I'm not trying to call anyone out, but I think it's a class war. What we're seeing in the city is a class war. And the race is definitely a big part of it. And don't get me wrong, I'm not, you know, glossing over. It's class war. It's all class.
Chuck, there's a lot of people calling in. We'll try to get a couple quick calls. We can get some final comments from our guests, because I think that we're going to be talking about class again on Monday, hopefully, or Tuesday, when we look at the state of cities around America, whether it's Richmond, Detroit, Baltimore, and the war is going on there. 410-319-8888. Robert, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Robert.
Mark and Josh. I'd like to also pretty much add on to what the previous call just said. It's definitely about class, undeniably so. But at the same time, too, what I believe upperly mobile bourgeoisie African-Americans need to recognize is that although they may be a part of this class, and I myself count myself as one. I have a master's degree. I'm an educator of the whole nine. But I'm under no illusion that when I drive my car, I'm still viewed as being a typical African-American male who is highly subject to being pulled over, despite the fact that I'm obeying all traffic laws. When you go back to the history of this country, particularly maybe 200 years ago, when Andrew Jackson, you know, had his barbaric policy against Native Americans, how he basically systematically wiped out many Native indigenous people in this country. And then he switched out, of course, obviously with African Americans being exploited through slavery. And then now you have his Hispanic men being demonized, you know, being called things like illegal immigrants and so forth. In my mind, I could see a time parallel from one century to the next, where so basically you have a deliberate targeting of young men of color, whether it be the young Native American brave, the African American slave, the Hispanic.
Robert, I'm sorry, we're just about out of time. What you're saying is important. I want you to just keep tuning into the show in the next hour, because we're actually going to have the Native American response to Trayvon Martin's death, and we're also going to talk to Native American journalists and activists about what's going on in the Native world. We're going to be surprised to hear some of the pieces that go out with that. What I'm going to do here, producers, is I'm going to let we're going to go right to our next segment, but I will let Floyd have his say, come back and have a closing statement from our two guests, and then move into Rose Aguilar looking at protests around America. Final 90-second thought, Floyd, is yours. Go. Floyd, you're on the air.
Good morning, Mark. I think you're having a great conversation, but I wanted to relate an experience I had as a black man in the city.
Over you're going to have to do it really fast and reach the point, because we're almost out of time.
The police stopped me and my captain, who both served our military honorably, for having a 12-ounce can of beer in a bag, and give us a ticket. We walk up the street, and there's four or five young white men throwing beer bottles, getting drunk. They walk right past them and don't stop them. And I'm saying, and he was so upset. He said, wait a minute, I got injured. I still got a wound from Vietnam. And these young guys just stopped peeing in the bed. And the officers didn't do anything to them. So I'm saying, wait a minute, what city are we living in?
You called from, this happened in Station North, right?
No, this happened right downtown.
Okay, because it says
right
Station North
Lombard,
on my...
Lombard and Howard Street.
Well, we're going to come back and do final comments from our two guests. Appreciate the call, Floyd. And that is part of the problem. But Floyd and Robert were talking about, Travis talking about class. We're going to come back and have final thoughts from our two guests before we move on to Rose Aguilar. Stay with us.
Early this morning, when you knocked upon my door.
Max Roach, Triptych, Prayer, Protest, Peace. He passed away on this day, Max Roach did, in 2007, and we are playing his music along with Robert Johnson. Of course, he was a radical, an activist, and a great musician, and we couldn't play more. We'd love to play all of it, but you should go listen to it yourself, Triptych by Max Roach. Before we turn over to Rose Aguilar, very quick, final thoughts from our last guest, which you heard, starting with Marta Mossberg, Lawrence Brown. Marta, very quickly.
I think that it is a class problem in Baltimore, but it's a political class in everyone else. And the real issue here is that there needs to be economic opportunity for everyone. And right now we have a system that is rigged towards people who already have money and who have the connections, and it's very inhospitable to everyone else. So that's what needs to change in my mind.
And I would say that when I talk about plutocracy, I am talking about class. And the issue is, like Marta's saying, that when our political representatives are being sponsored by and financed by wealthy plutocrats, whose interests do they really represent? And it's really not the everyday people, and that's an issue.
I want to thank both of you for being with us, Lawrence Brown, Marta Mossberg.
Good to be here.
Great to see
thanks.
You. Syndicated columnists. Got it right this time. Congratulations to that,
thank
by the
you.
Way. It's very good. Dr. Lawrence Brown here, political activist and
always
also
a
Professor
pleasure.
Morgan State. Good to have you both with us. And we'll talk to you all very soon.
Sounds good.
Wonderful.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.